the true horror I felt at the time. No one would want to read this story. I have not said on every line that I was in pain and felt desperate. In telling my story, I discuss things rationally and even make jokes. I talk about myself as if my body and my emotions were separate from my rational self, but of course they could not be entirely, and no part of myself was ever free from the pain and desperation. Then, too, if I were to insist constantly on the awfulness of the situation, it could make for boring reading. The experience was too bad to be boring at the time, but readers should keep in mind that much of the survival experience is repetitive and horrible at the same time that it has its lighter, reflective, and instructive moments. One of the most frequent questions that I'm asked is, "Do you still sail after all that?" My reply is simply, "What else would I do?" After a decade of doing nothing but messing around in boats, I cannot imagine suddenly launching a career as an astrophysicist or a Bowery bum. The sea is my workplace, my playground, and my home. It has offered me a pathway to more disciplines than I can ever master. Oceanography, aerodynamics, astronomy, and common sense problem solving are essential parts of sailing. Hydrodynamics, physics, engineering, and intuitive extrapolation are essential to boat design. Craftsmanship, metallurgy, forestry, and plastics technology are ingredients of boat building. I am a jack of all trades who has a passion for exploration. Where else can I find a place where knowing very little about a lot of things is so useful? Where else can I find such a great frontier within such easy reach? Introduction. It is always difficult to decide where a story begins and where it ends. However, some experiences, a romantic evening, a weekend retreat, or a voyage, have fairly distinct dividing lines. They are what I call whole experiences. To a large degree, the first 29 years of my life represent one whole experience that rests outside the scope of this book. But within those years are the seeds of this story. People often ask me how I got myself into such a fix in the first place. How did I know what to do? Was the boat I lost new, or had it been tried before? Why was I sailing offshore in such a small boat? The answers to these questions are an integral part of the story, its foundation. The foundation was laid in 1964, when at age 12, I began sailing. I fell in love with sailing instantly. I can think of a million reasons why it appealed to me so strongly: the immediate relationship with the environment, the simplified lifestyle devoid of modern inconveniences, as naval architect Dick Newick puts it, the sheer beauty of it. But all of the reasons can be summed up succinctly. Everything about it felt right. Before I ever began to sail, I thought that if I had lived in the 1700s, I would probably have become a mountain man or some such thing. Then I became enthralled with the history of the sailing ship, of square riggers battling their way around Cape Horn. I yearned for the romanticism and adventure of ages past. Shortly after I began sailing, I read a book called Tinkerbell by Robert Manry. In June 1965, Manry had sailed his 13.5-foot boat across the Atlantic in 78 days, a record at the time. Something about the simplicity of Manry's boat and his accomplishment of so much with so little struck a chord in my heart. He showed me that a life of adventure was still possible in the latter part of the 20th century. From that time on, I dreamed of crossing the Atlantic in a small boat. As years went by, I learned the skills necessary to accomplish this goal. I read books about all of the great voyages, the raft crossings of the Pacific by Heyerdahl and Willis, and the circumnavigations of Slocum, the Hiscox, and Guswell. Before I was out of high school, I had helped build a 40-footer. By 1974, I had begun a boat-building career and was living aboard. By 1977, I was designing boats and venturing offshore as far as Bermuda. By 1979, I was designing and teaching design full-time. All along, Manry and Tinkerbell lurked in the back of my mind and served as an inspiration, a way to pull everything together and give my life a focus. In 1980, I sold my 28-foot trimaran and put all of my resources into the creation of Napoleon Solo, a small cruiser. I relied on a great deal of aid from my ex-wife, Frisha Hugesson, and my good friend Chris Latcham, and a host of others. The design was unusual, though not at all radical. We took pains to create a handsome, meticulously constructed, cold-molded craft, excellent in light airs and well-balanced and forgiving in heavy weather. Solo became much more than a boat to me. I knew her every nail and screw, every grain of wood. It was as if I had created a living being. Sailors tend to feel that way about their boats. Chris and I gave Solo a harsh 1,000-mile shakedown cruise from Annapolis to Massachusetts through late fall gales. By the spring of 1981, I was ready to follow in Manry's wake. I was not interested in setting a record as Manry had done. Solo was just over 21 feet long. There weren't many boats of her size that had made the crossing.